And you're very welcome back to the programme. Now, let's see what's coming in on the text line. Traffic traffic flow much better on the Castle Finn Bridge without the traffic lights needs to be set up as they as when at the start so many people are jumping lights as they when they stopped working. Thanks. Okay. Yeah, someone earlier on was saying they haven't been working for 2 weeks. The second caller is in touch saying, you know what, it's better when they're not on. If you use that road, let us know. How long does the evidence of drugs stay in the system? For example, if you took it the previous weekend and you were tested the following Friday, can it be detected that you took it? I don't know. It'd be interesting to find out. I must see if there's anyone in the know that would know that. You know, any of the medical professionals or what have you. What the they call it afterlife or half-life is. How long does it stay in your system? I think it's quite clear with alcohol in many cases. Well, people sort of have a fair idea, but maybe not so much with different types of drugs. Now, morning, Greg. Shocking to see our young guards being attacked by foreigners who are being let into this country. These are our sons and daughters trying to keep our streets safe. Absolutely shocking. Well, the guards were quick to point out that this was a person who's Irish and born in Ireland. And I think it's for that very reason that the likes of that text as to why they come out in that instance and clarify it rather quickly, albeit controversially. A couple of birthday requests here. Could you please say happy birthday to Tracy Gallagher, working in Surgery 99 in Letterkenny. That comes in from Shane. Hi, Tracy. Another one here. Hi to all my Donegal, Rosnalla and Dunlow family and friends from Montreal. Best wishes to everyone. Love from Kathy McGlynn. Thanks very much for sending that in to us. Now, before we go to the break for your bingo numbers, just want to mention a brilliant weekend that we've got coming up for you here. I suppose after the excitement of the All-Ireland and everything else, maybe there's a little bit of a lull in what we have to look forward to. Well, what about this on the 31st of October to the 1st of November? It's our country music weekend. And what I like about this one is that you don't have to travel the length of the country or get on a plane if you don't want to, because it's in the Clanry Hotel in Letterkenny. As I say, it's on the 31st of October and the 1st of November. It's two big nights, one dance floor, and some of the biggest names on the Irish country music scene. Davy James and his band, Patrick Feeney and his band, Stacey Breen, Jordan McPollen and Michael English and his band. And it's a stayover if you want. Why not? €249 per person sharing. You get tickets to both nights of dancing. You get two nights bed and breakfast. And that's all for $249 per person sharing. If that's something that might interest you to look forward to for the 31st of October and the 1st of November, you can give us a call here at the radio station for more information, 9125000. Hop on the website, highlandradio.com, or indeed you can book directly at theclanryhotel.com. So as I say, something maybe for you to look forward to. It's two nights accommodation, bed and breakfast, two big nights of dancing for €249 per person. You get the treat of staying in a hotel, but you don't have that big long journey to it or the big long journey home. So that might be attractive to many of you listening out there. Big take up on those rooms as well. As you can imagine, they're not infinite in number. So if you are interested, get in touch. Now, Danny Curran is manager of the Donegal Donkey Sanctuary. He joins us on the programme now. Danny, thanks for joining us. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg, and thank you for having us on the show. Thank you very much.
Danny, why did you establish the Donegal Donkey Sanctuary?
Back 15 years ago, Greg, I was helping out with a couple of different animal welfare organisations, and there just come a need for somewhere for donkeys, you know, to be taken in and looked after. And we had a small farm here in Raphoe, and I had a couple of pet donkeys of my own. So I just started taking different ones in from here and there. And then a few people came along, started helping us. And we never actually realized it would grow to be what it is today. It just kept going and going and going. And now it has turned into a huge organization altogether. Like, you know, we're covering nearly half of the country, lifting donkeys here and there, and you know, it's just growing.
And how many donkeys do you have now?
We're just over 100 at the minute. We had 97 in our direct care, and then we took in this 12, but there was three stallions along with us 12, and they've gone to Hungry Horse outside in Longford for castration, and they'll be coming down to us probably in about 8 to 9 weeks time.
When they come to you, Danny, realistically, is that their forever home, or are there rehoming options, or are you the last port of call for these donkeys?
Well, we have over 800 donkeys out in new homes, Greg.
Right.
And for 15 years, we always had homes in front of us, but it has become a huge, huge task now trying to rehome. We're finding now that there's way more donkeys wanting to come in than what goes out. Our rehoming has slowed down. Like, you know, we're living in a different time with the cost of living crisis and everything. Like, owning a donkey, a pony, a horse, it's a large animal. You know, you need disposable income, you need stables, you need land. You know, it's not easy. It's a big ask anybody to take that on. Like, you know, so as I say, we've noticed a huge decrease in the amount of people looking for donkeys, but we've also seen a huge increase on the amount of donkeys looking to come to us. Like, you know, it's turning to be a huge problem for us. Like, you know, we don't own a lot of land. We only have a set amount of stables, and in 8 weeks time I'm not going to be able to stable all the donkeys that I have. So I was hoping this morning, along with talking about the 12 donkeys that we took in, to be able to maybe use this platform on Highland Radio. There could be a farmer, maybe not that far from us in Rafoe, or maybe a bit further away, that has downsized. He might have spare bays in his cattle shed, his sheep shed. You know, he might have a spare bit of land. Like, we'd be open to talking about, would he let us in for free? Could we rent? You know, we would be open to talking to anything. If they would get in contact with us, that would be absolutely wonderful.
And would it be, sorry, I just missed that last part of that, Danny. Would you continue to care for the donkeys on the farmer's property, or support them to care for them on their property if they've got the spare spaces? What would the relationship be there?
We would take care of them. We would clean out the sheds. We would feed the donkeys. We would do everything. Like, you know, logistics is the problem, Greg. Like, if somebody offers us a shed in Galway or Sligo, it's no good. Like, you know, so we're looking to be as close to here as we can. Like, you know, but we're also willing, you know, there might be a farmer out there that has decided he's going to sell his farm. Like, we don't have the finances to buy it, but we might enter into some agreement that we could pay off bit by bit. You know, like, we have to expand, but we've often sat at committee level here and discussed how are we going to do it. Like, you know, there's farms go for sale in Rafoe, but you're talking a quarter of a million, half a million. You know, we just know that's impossible. Like, you know, unless some one of us wins the lottery, or maybe you would buy it for us, Greg, but we don't know. Like, we just have to live in hope. Like, you know.
Yeah, so you couldn't turn away these 12 donkeys. What kind of lives have they had? I mean, what condition do these animals come to you in? Is it when people are so desperate, or maybe another organisation becomes involved, or do they often come to you well looked after? What is there a normal situation?
Well, every donkey, really, Greg, has a different story. We get some donkeys are handed over in perfect condition. I took in two donkeys a fortnight ago from a lovely lady in Cavan. She has just become too old to look after them. There were too much work for her. She waited 7 months for us to collect them donkeys from her, and they were perfect in every way. They're here grazing in a field. You know, everything's great with them. And then we get the likes of these 12 donkeys. You know, it's basically an animal hoarding situation where people had a small piece of land. They took in too many animals. They weren't able to look after them. They hadn't the finances. You know, what's happened with these 12 has not probably been going on for maybe anything up to 2 years. You know, their feet didn't get into that condition overnight, like, you know. And we've taken in animals that had malnutrition. We've taken in animals that are nearly, you know, living with lice and worms. And, you know, every situation is different. You know, like, you just have to, as they come to you, you have to deal with them, the different situations, and try and work around them. Like, it used to be a case, you know, that we would have rehomed, say, 10 animals over a 2 or 3 month period. And then, you know, we would have had space for to take in more. It's getting to the point now where we don't have space and we still have people. I had a phone call yesterday about a donkey wandering just outside Letterkenny.
Yeah.
I'm hoping to contact back to that girl today. Maybe the owner has turned up for it. It just broke out of somewhere. But as it stands of today, if I took in that donkey, it's joining a queue to stand in a field, and I don't have shelter for them for the winter. So that's what's becoming a huge issue in front of me in the next 2 months.
Yeah, literally a roof over their heads. What is there in sort of 2025, why do people have donkeys? Is there any financial advantage in it? Are people buying them as pets and then not realising the amount of care that's required? Like, why are donkeys being, you know, bred and sold and bought in this day and age if it turns out really quickly that people can't look after them?
That's an endless question, Greg, and I ask myself that question every day. We get people that buy donkeys for children, and then they realize they're big animals and they have the potential to kill a child, so then they want rid of them immediately. People breed them for various different reasons. We have farmers that buy them. They heard a rumor you can get a subsidy on them, only to find out you don't get a subsidy on them. There is a situation where they will get a subsidy on them, but it can be drawn immediately. It happened with the Connemara ponies many years ago, where the government provided a subsidy, and then when they withdrew the subsidy, them Connemara ponies were immediately unwanted on all them farms. You know, so like I have no answer to that, Greg. Like we meet different circumstances every day of the week, and when we ask people why they got them, we get all kinds of answers. Like, you know, I had one when I was young. You know, I thought they would be easy kept. You know, just the answers never end, and you just have to take the donkey and hope that we have space and hope that we're able to look after it. That's where we are.
And it's all done through public support, is that right, Danny? Because not for some reason, that sounds terrible, but the public do tend to put their hands in their pockets to support donkey welfare and the work that you do in that regard.
Yeah, we're blessed. Like, you know, we use GoFundMe, we use various other methods. We have supporters in the great all over Donegal, all over Ireland, the UK. And, you know, as I say, we're here 15 years working in Ireland. A lot of visitors to the sanctuary. People flee the sanctuary. They see the work that we do. And when we talk to people, we can tell them, you know, how hard it is to keep going. And like every penny that's donated, you know, is put back into the donkeys to look after the donkeys. And, you know, it's a struggle every day. You know, as I said a minute ago, we're 8 weeks away from winter, and that means hay has to be bought, straw has to be bought, meal has to be bought, and we have vehicles to maintain and run. You know, it's never ending. Like the financial strains of it, you know, there's days you just wonder how you can possibly keep going. But when you look around you and you've got, you know, 100 donkeys needing to be fed, you just have to keep on going.
Yeah, and you've 12 more, and that's why we're talking to you today. You couldn't refuse them, and they can graze and be looked after, but the reality is winter is coming. They will need a roof over their heads. You have an emergency GoFundMe page up. Where can people access that, Danny?
If they go onto our Facebook page, or I think there's a link on Donegal Daily at the minute as well. You know, if they call to the sanctuary, or even if they contact us in any way, but probably through our Facebook page is the best way that people can contact us and make a direct donation on there. We'll post our bank details later on today on the Facebook page. If people want to donate to us that way, they could use PayPal link, you know. But as I often say, no donation is too small, and we need all the help that we can get at the minute.
And of course, just that appeal to any landowners, any farmers in the area. Maybe they've downsized, or they're not farming the way they might have in the past, but they have, you know, maybe some sheds that are available or what have you. You're keen to talk to them and see what arrangement can be reached.
Yeah, we're very, very keen. If somebody's listening this morning that has a farm and they've downsized enough that they think they would for us to work alongside them, you know, we would be just any kind of arrangement or option. You know, but as I say, logistics is the problem. When we buy in lorry loads of hay here to the sanctuary, we don't want to be having to, you know, carry it for miles and miles again, like, you know, and machinery for unloading, loading, stuff like that there. Like, but as I say, we'd talk to anybody at the minute. We're desperate, you know, so somebody might be listening that would come on and say, well, I don't know if this would be right, but
A caller says, if I was to adopt a donkey, what would the average cost per year be to do it? I'm thinking of a pet for my grandchildren and encouraging them to do the work. What's the level of care? Would they look after it themselves? Is there huge vet costs? And I think maybe that question isn't, I mean it with no disrespect, it's kind of asking if you know, what does a top-of-the-range BMW do miles per gallon? If you kind of have to ask that question, maybe you don't have the, you know, maybe you don't have the space or the time or realise the size of these animals, etc.
Yeah, well, we often get requests. People come to us, you know, and they'll say they would like a donkey for their grandchildren or maybe, you know, nieces or nephews. The one thing I always say to people is to bear in mind, these are big animals. Mm. If they're not handled correctly, one kick, you know, one stamp. I've often been kicked and you know, not been able to walk right for 3 weeks after it. You know, they can be dangerous. Don't have time to train these animals as well. It takes half an hour to work. Over 100, you just can't do it. So, you know, these people, somebody like that would need to come and talk to us, would show what's involved. Depending on if they have land, if they have stables, they have access to hay, the cost can go from anything from €1,000 a year to €2,000 or €3,000 a year if you have to rent land and stuff like that. Like, you know, so it's too wide a field to give a proper answer on. But look, that person wants to come to the sanctuary and talk to us. We're here to talk.
Great stuff. All right. Listen, Danny, check out the Donegal Sanctuary, Donegal Donkey Sanctuary Facebook page. We've shared the links in ours as well, and they're in the other sections of the media. If you can offer anything as it relates to the I Donate appeal, and also obviously if you're a farmer in the Rafo area, the closer the better, and you feel you can have a conversation with Danny, get in touch with them or us and we can pass the numbers on. But for now, Danny, thank you very much indeed for your time.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you for
taking care of yourself. Danny Curran there, manager of the Donegal Donkey Sanctuary. Right. Hi, Greg. Hair sample can pick up drugs up to 3 months. Indeed, but I think people might be more interested in the roadside one. And the reason I'm trying to get it out there is maybe it might be a discouragement, if that makes sense. It's not to try and see when you can do it without getting caught. Everyone's driving every day, aren't they? And I just think it would be good information out there. It might be, you know, a discouragement. A caller says, in fact, her name is Katrina. I was on holidays in Portugal recently, and the infrastructure in Portugal is very basic. There are no road markings or cat's eyes. I travelled with Uber. Uber is an app for those who weren't or aren't aware. It was €30 for the taxi. The taxi driver only got €11. Uber takes the majority and the rest of the money goes to the government. I told her that I'd use her directly instead of paying Uber. I took her number and used her for the rest of my holidays, so she got the money directly. It's crazy that we let apps take our money. There you go. Well, it's the taxi drivers losing the money. Good idea, Katrina. If you can sort of build up that rapport with someone, it saves you money and they get more money. So in other words, she could charge you €20 for the €30 trip. You're getting better value for money. She's doubling her money. So yeah, I can see it makes sense. I think there's a lot of rival apps over there as well that pay their drivers better than Uber, which I only realised relatively recently. But there's that convenience factor, isn't it? You just click the button and the taxi's there. But anyway, that's not a bad idea, Katrina. And just one request I didn't get to a little earlier on. In fact, I did get to that one a little earlier on. Okay, I'll be back with more after we take a quick break. Now, very welcome back to the show. On the programme now, we have Simon Barry, Director of Research, Advocacy and International at the Competitions and Consumer Protection Commission. And the focus today, Simon, is on transparency in the home buying process. What feedback are you getting? What is your research showing that shows that we need more transparency?
Well, at the CCPC, we're acutely aware of the fact that for Irish consumers, buying a home is potentially the biggest financial decision and commitment that they're going to make over the course of their entire lifetime. And we know from our research that typically for most people, they only do this once or twice over the course of their life. And that means that they don't have an opportunity to learn as they go. There isn't a repeat experience here that they can use to learn for the future in many cases. And also that the principle that operates for most of this market is on a buyer beware basis. In other words, it's up to the buyer to inform themselves about all the key relevant information that they need. So all of that taken together means that in this particular market, it's so important, but it's also so important to get really good quality information available to people as early as possible in the process. Because we know from our research that consumers find this really stressful. They don't find it easy at all to navigate it. They really struggle with it. And in particular on the information provision, they don't find it a transparent market. They don't find it easy to understand what information they need to ask about or where the most trusted sources necessarily are. So we know that there's varying degrees of trust among different parties in the course of a buying purchase process. Family and friends, their own solicitor and engineers are trusted sources, but other parties in the selling transaction on the seller side, the seller, the seller's solicitor and estate agents, don't enjoy the same level of trust among potential buyers. So all of that taken together really does place a very high premium for buyers to get good quality information early in the process, and that's the focus of a number of our main recommendations this morning.
And how does that play out then? Because, I mean, it seems to be the seller and their estate agent, and the estate agent obviously is working on behalf of the seller. You're asking them to divulge more information to the potential buyer of the property. Like, how does that work? What kind of information are you talking about? Where are the gaps?
Yeah, sure. So, well, one of our main recommendations is in relation to information that's already provided in the process, but it comes very, very late. So we think that there's significant advantages and benefits for home buyers to receive this information much earlier in the process, so that when they're thinking about how to spend their time researching different properties, trying to shortlist, trying to figure out what are they really going to kind of commit to in terms of their preferred house, that stuff that gets made available but only later in the process gets brought forward. So that includes things like confirmation that the title deeds are in order, confirmation that the boundary map information is available, information about whether the purchase might be subject to a probate process, for example, and also that confirmation that the property is tax compliant. So this isn't about kind of new information in this case. This is about giving people access to the information that would naturally be part of the process, but which currently comes.
So were you saying that maybe in one house sale, there might be potentially three or four potential purchasers that stumble across this information too late in the process and waste their time potentially?
Well, not necessarily that there would be multiple parties, but if somebody goes sale agreed, for example,
yeah.
Then that triggers the conveyancing process. So all of this information, title deeds, boundary maps, probate and tax compliance, so all of this gets uncovered over the course of what can be a really lengthy process. So we're saying that actually consumers are identifying, and our research is identifying, that providing this information much earlier and at the beginning and making it a requirement that all properties coming to the market have this stuff ready to go, rather than subject to discovery over the course of a lengthy process. So we think that this can help avoid delays and avoid the cost implications of delays for people. For example, if the process gets delayed, people might need to avail of rental accommodation and incur additional costs because there was some delay in getting title deeds or boundary maps. So it's about making sure that all that information that's currently required is just made available right at the beginning, so it doesn't become the source of delay and frustration, stress, hassle and cost for potential buyers later in the process.
And as tough as it might be for some to heed this call, you know, when there's plenty of properties on the market, you know, available properties are at a premium. It's a real seller's market at the moment. If you've got a good property, why might people comply with your request in this regard, Simon?
Well, so we're asking the government to legislate for this. That's our key recommendation here. So we think that there is scope for considerable improvement in the way that this market operates, and that there are considerable benefits, not just for buyers, but, you know, there are other parties in the process for whom an outcome that these processes take much shorter periods of time benefits everybody. It benefits estate agents. It provides extra certainty for sellers themselves, as well as for the market as a whole, where, you know, we have a greater flow of properties working their way through the system. So that's what we're doing. We're calling on the government to introduce this as a requirement, that this information is made available at the beginning of the process rather than later.
Yeah, and of course we've got factors like, not exclusively in Donegal now, but, you know, defective concrete blocks too, which further complicates the whole process, and the want for proper information in a timely fashion.
Exactly. So, I mean, in the CCPC, we're focused on trying to identify ways to make markets work better for consumers. And that involves, in some cases, calling on the government and other participants to do things differently and to implement recommendations. But we're also conscious and we're really prioritising stuff that we can do. What are the actions that we, the CCPC, can take? So maybe to just give you a couple of quick examples.
Sure.
So we currently have a 9-step buyer guide on our website to help people navigate the process. But we've identified a number of areas where we can improve and enhance that guide. So, for example, I think you mentioned this earlier, that some people really struggle with trying to figure out, well, what are the key questions to ask in the process, because they don't have much experience to go on. So we're going to be addressing that. We're going to be adding questions that can help people further enhance their experience. But it also covers, and we're going to be including this in our guide as we work through it, the recommendation that people really do consider getting a structural survey done at a really early stage in the process, so that it prevents and addresses the risk of kind of bad news and bad surprises coming very late in the process, or in some cases potentially too late. So we're going to be addressing some of those things kind of head on in terms of actions that we can do ourselves. And we're also going to be developing guidance for estate agents to enhance the information that features in property ads. So they're among the things that we're going to be acting on. As I said, we're calling on the government to introduce the pre-sale requirements. And we also have another recommendation that your listeners may be interested in, which is we're also asking the government to consolidate information that's currently available out there within the public sector agency world, and to bring it together in one place, so that somebody who has an interest in, say, a particular address or a particular property at an air code, they can put in that address and it will reveal a lot of information that's already out there, but in maybe separate different places. So what do I mean by that? Things like broadband coverage, mobile phone coverage, any information on flood risks, for example. So in our research, we identified a really good example of this in the Netherlands, where they have such a system, and it works really well, not just because of the information that's provided, but also the way it's presented, and it's easy for consumers to understand. So they have a traffic light system, which also features emojis, of all things, where if you put in the address, it will give you a kind of a green, amber, or red. Green, obviously, is that, you know, the expected features or amenities or services are available. Amber would indicate that maybe there's something that a potential purchaser could explore further, do some further digging on, or red, where there's a particular issue that that's flagging maybe an issue of concern. So we think that could also, as a separate recommendation, play a really important role there in just helping people navigate what's a really complex, arduous and stressful and lengthy process. So that's why that features as one of our recommendations also.
All right, super stuff. Thanks very much, Simon. I do appreciate your time, Simon Barry there of the CCPC. A caller says, I'm just wondering if that lady that done the private deal with the Uber driver in Portugal, would she still be covered by insurance if you're not booked through Uber in case of a collision or an accident? I would imagine so, because I think a lot of these taxi drivers, they might have a Free Now phone and an Uber phone, and they take the runs as they see fit. But I think they also can operate themselves as a Hackney stroke taxi service. So I would imagine so, unless I'm missing something. Please get the lights back on Castlefin Bridge before there is a serious collision there. Yeah, indeed. We've had a number of people very keen to see them return. One or two sort of said that traffic moves better with them not on, but I think the majority now are saying that they need to be there. They need to be functioning before there is a serious collision there. Just some figures from the Irish Nurses and Midwives Organisation. It's just quite notable from a Letterkenny perspective, a Donegal perspective. 43 people are been admitted to the hospital. They're waiting in a bed today. 17 in the emergency department, 26. So that's an indication that there must be under pressure there. University Hospital Limerick, the figure's 86, by the way. And in Galway, it's 62. So Letterkenny, the third most busy hospital in terms of in terms of people waiting on a bed, sick people waiting on a bed in the country. But Limerick is consistently very, very high there, isn't it? I just want to mention, by the way, sorry, a run that we have to Riverdance 30. This is the new generation of river dancers, and it's coming to the Gaiety Theatre in Dublin for a limited anniversary tour. So it's 30 years on, believe it or believe it not. Now, we have a very busy coach heading down there. There are just a small number of spaces left. So if you've any desire to go, now's the time to get on it. So what do you get? Well, it's for Thursday, the 28th of August, I should say, so it's less than a month away now. So you get overnight accommodation, bed and breakfast at the four-star Grand Canal Hotel in the heart of Dublin. You get your luxury coach travel, of course, tickets for the show and some free time in Dublin. So we do have, just at this point, limited availability. Don't miss out. So if you're interested in finding out more, give us a call, 074 91 25000, or go to highlandradio.com. And David James, your own David James, is a very busy boy this week. I think he's in Dunloe tonight. Later today, doing his outside broadcast. And what a lineup of guests. If you're in and around Dunloe, land in to, I'll get the exact location of it. I think it's in the tent there. But he's got the cream of the crop of Irish musicians on his show. So get into that if you can. But anyway, the reason I mentioned David, he's leading out this trip for Riverdance 30, the new generation. 074 91 25000. If you want more information over the phone, or check out our website, highlandradio.com. Right, now, very shortly, we're going to be speaking to the CEO of the Asthma Society of Ireland. We're talking about cost pressures forcing asthma patients to cut back on their medication. We heard that, or heard about that, on the news, and we're going to dig in a little bit more with the CEO of the Irish Asthma Society. That's coming up in the not too distant future. So if you've anything to say in relation to that, 086 60 25000, that's the WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25000, or of course give us a call on 074 91 25,000. Just was tracking some of X's court cases. They're tied in with quite a few court cases here in the Republic, and they brought a high court challenge to a new safety code. There's an awful lot of resistance to any plans, it seems, to make the internet a safer place for young people. And as I've often said, it's the adults who don't want to divulge their own private information that often resist the most. Well, social media giant X has lost a high court challenge brought against Ireland's broadcasting and online media regulator, Commissioner Mann, over its online safety code. X International Unlimited company, which operates X, formerly known as Twitter, had alleged that the media regulator engaged in regulatory overreach in its approach to restrictions on certain video content. Commissioner Mann's online safety code, which was adopted last October and came into effect earlier this month, sets out legally binding rules for the video sharing platforms. It's aimed at protecting the public and especially children from harmful online comments. But I'm not sure really many of the companies have put anything in place at all in that regard. And I do note as well that Australia seem to be taking that whole situation far more seriously. They are really cracking down on young people's access to online apps. For an example, they have just added YouTube into the mix for anyone under the age of 16. You're not allowed to use YouTube over there. Do you think that's going a little bit too far, or is it about right? Let me know. Now, Eilish Nihanya is CEO of the Asthma Society of Ireland and joins me on the... Sorry, my microphone's all the wrong direction. Joins me on the programme right now. Good morning to you, Eilish. Thanks so much for your time.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I was listening to our news team discussing this here, and it's a real problem, isn't it, for one in four asthma sufferers, if that's the right phraseology, or people with asthma. The cost of medication is prohibitive for many people.
It is, and for the Asthma Society, that's not new news necessarily. The numbers of people who are having to forego medications because of financial constraints, and I think it's critical to contextualise that this is part of a much broader issue around financial hardships in homes. So we went out and did a survey of our community and found that over half were having trouble making ends meet in the last 12 months, and that this is one element. And essentially what's happening is people are being forced to choose between their asthma medication, which is going to keep them well, that they need to be able to breathe freely, and something as basic as having a second pair of shoes that fit properly. So you can imagine now, it's coming up to August, families are starting to bring in the school uniforms, they're starting to look at the new pair of shoes for the children sending them back to school, and it's going to be an even more pressurised time for them, just as the government is announcing its budget decisions in October.
It's very much in the government's interest to keep people on their medication to prevent people having or getting to a situation where they need a hospital visit, for an example. So you would imagine that if we looked at the numbers, is it better value to, you know, try and make these medicines more readily available?
Yeah, so look, the people taking their medications, or it's referred to, I suppose, by in the medical world as adherence rates, right? Medication adherence rates. They're across chronic diseases, they tend to be relatively low, and especially when people are feeling well. And if they're in that position where they're starting to have to choose, you know, between the shoes or the medication, they'll go with the shoes. Mm. But obviously it's going to have then a knock-on impact. And certainly coming in, I mean, all throughout the year, honestly, people with asthma tend to have, you know, particular seasonal triggers. So they could have the hay fever during the summer, and then they're getting into winter and it's viral season and people end up very sick. And so the factors that impact people taking on their medication, it does go beyond the cost of the medication. And for example, people need education. They need to know how to take their medication properly. They need to be sure actually that they've been diagnosed with asthma correctly. And that's a whole other story, right? But for the purposes of the budget coming up, what we're saying is this is an action that the government can take to support higher levels of adherence. And yes, that means that fewer trips to the emergency department, fewer unscheduled GP visits, fewer lost days in work or in school. And actually, on top of all of that, people living full, healthy lives right up until their 70s or 80s, you'd hope, even beyond, because they've had the medication they need to keep their lungs healthy.
It's costed, and some of it in the wider scale of the health budget, it seems small enough for others, major investment, but you might have to look at the clawback in other areas, etc. Mm-hmm. So what realistically would you be hoping that the government might begin to look at in this budget, if not everything?
Yeah, that's it. So for a long time, the Asthma Society was saying, add asthma to the long-term illness scheme.
Yeah.
There are 16 conditions on that. They've been there since the 70s and it hasn't changed. And any of the conditions on there, their meds, their devices, everything are free, which is brilliant. I mean, I wouldn't argue it for a moment. What we're saying is they're not changing the long-term illness scheme. People need their asthma medications. Let's be practical about it, not do it all overnight, and instead phase it in. So start with the gold standard asthma medication, which are combination inhalers, and I'm happy to describe those to you. But you start with those, the ones that we know are most effective, most likely to keep people out of hospital, keep people well. If we start with those this year, that would be a very good start.
What we've seen too, and it's in Donegal and other counties now, is defective concrete blocks and the living conditions, you know, mould in the rooms,
yes.
People developing asthma that never had asthma before. That is a cohort, obviously, that need support and attention. But there are other people living in just older homes, poor ventilation, single glazing, whatever it might be. Again, whether it's this year or down the line, to make some schemes specifically available for those people, or make them more affordable, to try and improve their, I suppose, their health, but also maybe even their dependency on medication.
Yeah, well, look, we'd be fans of the Warmer Homes scheme, which are those grants that are given to lower income households to retrofit their homes and make them more energy efficient. There was a pilot done. It was a cross departmental pilot done back, I think, 2016 to 2018. And that was called the Warmth and Wellbeing Scheme. It was done in a couple of areas of Dublin City, and it was given to lower income households where there were long-term respiratory conditions. And the findings which were conducted by an academic institution on behalf of the government and published this year, found that having those, coming back to those households now, they're demonstrating fewer asthma symptoms, respiratory symptoms. They need lower doses or less medication, less GP or fewer GP visits, and even things like chronic pain. Mm. They're reporting less of that. So we now know, we have the evidence that's been gathered by the government themselves, that this works. So let's pour money into the existing warmer home scheme and make sure, because the lower income households are more likely to have those problematic conditions, to pour more money in there, reach more people. And by doing that, you're going to reach a large number that have asthma or respiratory conditions, given that 1 in 10 people in Ireland have asthma.
But you're also meeting your other targets as well. Some might say it's a bit of a win-win. Listen, thank you so much for your time. Have a wonderful day. I do appreciate it.
Thanks, Greg.
All right, bye-bye. That's Eilish Nihania, I beg your pardon, Eilish Nihania, who is CEO of the Asthma Society of Ireland.